Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I am Davis Maddock, joined today by Eric Beimfor. We are in the weeds of the best ball season, tapering off right now for me, tapering off some of the underdog contests, mostly just because that's kind of what the research suggested is you want to hit it really hard right when it opens and then kind of wait for training camp news, but also because limited number of bullets on underdog. And right now the waters on DraftKings.com best ball. I mean, it's like we say, oh dude, it's so easy, but like it actually is. Like I would guess that I'm going to advance 30% of my teams on DraftKings. If I had to guess, I mean, I took Christian McCaffrey at 5 this morning. Like, it's just like, It and especially just because they're $5, it like this is the time to be. You're getting your reps in. You're like, okay, I'm gonna get this stack. Like that's honestly a big. I think you did an article about this on Spike Week, just about being able to figure out drafts in the middle of it, and a huge part of that is just getting the reps in.
100%. That's what I'm. Same thing as you. What I'm like using this time for, and that DK $5, like you said, is just so perfect. I think they have a $3.20 max if you want to hop down to that. They have like every possible buy-in level. And like you said, they're all soft. And so with them being all soft, that allows you to experiment with different stuff and you're still going to build good teams. You know, like if I start to experiment too much, you know, in Best Ball Mania on underdog, it's like, A, that's $25 compared to $5. And B, I'm not going to get punished for a mistake or a reach or doing something crazy on DraftKings. Because the rooms are just, like you said, we go through this and like we say it, but you just have to tell, like, I have no other way to communicate to somebody, just like do 10 drafts on DraftKings and then do 10 drafts on underdog and tell me how you feel about those DraftKings teams compared to the underdog. Cause every team I draft on DraftKings, I just feel like, oh my God, this is it. That's the million, you know, that's the $1 million winner. And I don't necessarily feel that on underdog or on drafters. I know we don't talk a ton about drafters. But the same way that
drafters
like in the
is
middle.
Just drafters is just so different. It really, cause some of the guys I really like on underdog and DraftKings, like I'm not touching them in right. Drafters at all. So like, you know, I've kind of just this whole time I've been like, you know, Beckham is probably going to be a negative advance rate player, but if you sneak through a really good team to the final and Odell Beckham is the number one wide receiver in Green Bay, he could resign with the Rams, right? They have a great mm-hmm. week 17 game, could sign with the Buccaneers. I haven't heard that one floated at all. And it doesn't make a ton of sense because Godwin is also banged up. So carrying two banged up guys doesn't make a ton of sense. But I mean, there's just lots. And clearly, I think the thing with Beckham is he clearly wants to go to a winning team. Like he's made enough money. So it's, and Julio Jones, I know you like, you don't like him because he's old, and I don't normally like old players either, but I think the same thing is true with Julio. Like Julio is only signing with a top 5 team, right? I don't see a scenario where he is, you know, going to go play for the Seahawks or something. Like it's just not going to happen.
I mostly like making fun of those guys, and I am not really drafting Julio, but I can see it's one of those. And this is another thing that we'll get to a subject that I'm really, really like smashing heavily in drafts, but like particularly in Best Ball Mania, I have 150, $25 bullets. And like, people will say like, oh, like don't have rigid rules and don't, you know, everybody can be, what's the thing? Like everybody can be a good pick at a certain ADP. And it's like, that's all bullshit. Like that makes you sound like you feel good. Like when you say that and you feel like you're being sharp, but like I have 150 bullets into this contest and I want to optimize those around these 5 things, right? There's 5 things that I think are week 17, maybe some youth, maybe certain offenses, maybe certain archetypes of players, whatever. Everybody's list is different. And then that might be like ADP value or free Julio Jones or whatever for somebody. And that's fine. But people will say like, oh, like, well, you know, if Julio falls, just take him in this draft. And I'm like, but that's not a part of my core strategy. And so again, going back to like what you're talking about at the top, this is a good time to figure all that out. Like pile some $5 drafts in. Just about everyone I know can afford X amount of $5 drafts on DraftKings. If you want to save your bullets on in Best Ball Mania or in the DK higher stuff or whatever, like figuring all that out, I think is what this perfect that this time is perfect for, even more than like the barbell thing. It's like, yes, I believe in that. Like I've been writing about that for like 2 years about the barbell thing. But I think even more important is like, you can barbell all you want. If you're a shitty drafter and you don't really have a strategy, none of that matters in the first place.
Yeah. Plus you can use the crowns on DraftKings. Yeah. I use my crowns to, it's like I'm just getting free rolled for these. It's like, so yeah,
we need an underdog, like Kibble or something like that. We need,
yeah. Rudman, dude, what are we doing here? We need not even big, like 0.05% rake back would add up in a big way. We gotta tweet that, yes. Because that absolutely needs to happen. There needs to be a reward system set up there.
Do it when you share the podcast on Twitter. We can get double the engagement from Rudman.
There we go. So what I wanted to talk about today was week 17 game stacks, which I feel like the field is doing, but potentially not doing quite enough. But then also, like, you know, Hayden has been tweeting out, I think, some of these pretty helpful things about, you know, essentially like how much stacking is too much, what is the optimal, and Sam Hoppen, our buddy, has been doing this as well. One of the interesting, I thought this is really easily intuitive when you think about it for like 10 seconds, which is that stacking a quarterback with his wide receiver 4 and his wide receiver 1 is super profitable. And if you think about that, it makes total sense, because the wide receiver 4 is going to come cheap. I mean, who's the most expensive wide receiver 4? Hardman is. Yeah. But those guys are, like, for example, if Marquez Valdes-Scantling tore his ACL tomorrow, then Hardman would go way up. If Gabe Davis got hurt in training camp, Isaiah McKenzie would go way up. You know, if one of the, it'd be really funny to see, like, who would the Bengals' fourth wide receiver be if T like hurt his hamstring? They'd probably sign somebody. That would be a Julio Jones spot, or yes, an Odell Beckham spot, or a Will Fuller spot.
The ghost of Will Fuller.
So it's like, and it's like, also it's like one of those spots where like no one has any conviction in those, like other than Hardman literally is the one example of a wide receiver 4 being drafted with some, or maybe Tim Patrick is he's the third Hamler. Wide receiver, I guess. Hamler. Yeah. But it just makes total sense, because you're getting a good price on the guy and you're banking a bunch of rounds of, like, you know, theoretical expected value with that injury. And if the quarterback is good, that probably means that the elevated wide receiver also has a couple spike week games. So I'm really trying to mix these things in.
Yeah, I think that's one of, we definitely, you know, most people that like I know started doing it last year, but maybe not even as well as possible. I think this will be 2 for 2. The last time I came on here, I think this name came up, which is a sad state of how my brain works. But a guy who ended up falling into this bucket all the time for me last year was Colin Johnson.
Yeah,
where I was stacking the Jaguars, and they had a very clear fourth wide receiver, and probably to the McColl and maybe to the Broncos situation, it's actually fairly ambiguous in those situations too. Like, we're assuming it's, you know, Sky Moore and Juju and MVS, and then McColl's the fourth guy, and we're assuming KJ Hamler is the fourth guy behind Tim Patrick, but like, that's not a certainty. KJ Hamler's really good at football. McColl, you know, we don't think is very good at football, but all he has is a rookie and MVS.
I mean, he is the only guy on the roster right now who has been a wide receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs before. Right. No one. Right. I think that only Garrett Dieter and Josh Gordon are the only other guys on the roster who have caught a pass from Mahomes, I believe.
And they're not going to make the team. So that's maybe Josh Gordon does, I don't know, because of his blocking or something like that, but like, you're not,
they have 13 wide receivers, so it's literally just going to be whoever has a good training camp.
And people are drafting Justin Ross with more confidence than McColl Hardman.
Justin Ross is the worst pick in best ball right now. Like, he's not going to make the team, and if he does, he'll make it for the practice squad. I would think that even like Darius Fountain has a better chance, because Fountain will play special teams. Like, he's got a better chance of making the roster than Ross does.
You can't be the sixth wide receiver and not play special teams. And Justin Ross has probably never played a special team in his life.
Like literally probably has never gunned a punt, never tackled anyone on a kickoff, like ever.
No, Jameson Williams was the fucking gunner for Alabama. And Justin Ross is a UDFA that's never played a special team in his life. And people are like taking him with confidence in like the 17th round, but they hate McColl. And it's like, but those again, setting aside the Justin Ross thing, those are the situations to pounce on because of there's value in the ambiguity, right? McColl could just start. There's an absolutely
He will. Yeah. Hardman will start
over Sky.
It will just be a matter of how Sky progresses. Like if Sky, it could be like I don't think Sky is going to be this good, but it could be like a Justin Jefferson thing, you know, like Olabisi Johnson started over Justin Jefferson as a rookie. And then week three, Justin Jefferson comes in and you know, I literally don't think we ever saw Olabisi Johnson ever again. And so it could totally be one of those things, or Sky Moore could wait until week nine to become a regular part. I mean, Hardman was the 60th overall pick and played a lot in his first ever game because Tyree got hurt in it, but then really didn't play that much for the rest of the year.
Isn't it a really tough scene, even for you to say it out loud, comping McColl Hardman to Olabisi?
I mean, that is literally who he is at this stage in his career. He is literally Olabisi Johnson. This is insane. I actually didn't realize this. Hardman scored 6 touchdowns as a rookie, which is kind of wild to think about because he's only gotten worse since then. Hardman has gotten worse every year that he has played, which is really funny.
Which is really hard to do for anyone. It's certainly hard for someone that fast playing with Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Travis Kelce. Like, dude, just don't be absolutely horrible. And you're going to get the ball with enough space when you run a 4.240 to probably make some shit happen. And he can't do it. Like, how is that possible?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not great. So game stacks.
Yeah.
My number one, and I honestly think it's by like a country mile, is Broncos Chiefs.
Yep.
Because the prices are all pretty affordable. You know, outside of Kelce, Mahomes, and Javonte, you can pretty much work them in on any team. And even those guys, and also the ADPs just line up. Like Kelce round 1, Mahomes round 3. Sometimes even, like, if you're picking at 10, sometimes you can even get him at the 4.02, which I think you've talked about this before. I do that a lot because you are wanting to have as many bullets at the perfect team as possible, you know? And so taking the 15% chance that Mahomes slide is better than reaching on him. And then after round 10, you have loads of other guys you can put in there. MVS is like 9-10 now. He was cheaper than that. But MVS, Hardman, Patrick, Hamler, Alberto, Ronald Jones, even Melvin Gordon, honestly. Like, there are just so many ways to make that game work. It's what's the total of that game going to be?
50,
55. Yeah, it's going to be so high. And I mean, the field is probably sharp to it. You know, it's not as if I don't think people are going to be like, oh, I took Mahomes, I better take Jerry Jeudy here. Like, I think probably people are going to do it. But also, I think we probably overstate how much of the field is consciously doing this. Like, I would guess max 15% of the teams are going to have at least 2 players from the side of a week 17 game on purpose. Now, maybe
on purpose. Yep.
Yeah. Now maybe teams like just end up that way and they're not even intending to, but my guess would be like max 15% of the teams in BBM 3 would be doing that.
Yeah. I think couple of things. One on that point, TJ Hernandez from 4 for 4, who's also doing, I'm throwing him into the bucket with Hayden and Sam.
Yeah.
And
he's guys doing, TJ's doing good stuff.
They're all doing the Lord's work. So that I don't have to do it and I can just quote tweet it and say some super snarky ass comment. And like, you know, I get my
TJ effect. Actually had my favorite observation of the offseason after looking at the data, which is that 20% of the teams in the final last year drafted 2 running backs from the same team.
Oh yeah. 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 You're right. I did see that, which is, that's very funny. And a lot of people took that different ways. And there are, I guess, technically 2 different ways.
Well, there were a couple situations that it just worked out perfectly for last year, namely being Chuba Hubbard and McCaffrey.
Yep.
Where you got a bunch of spike weeks from, and Hubbard was so cheap. But I mean, I think they're like McCaffrey and Donta Foreman this year is honestly the same thing. But anyways, continue.
Yeah. So, but I believe it was TJ that put this one out. I'm going to get all these guys confused. So you three guys, sorry, you all get a shout out because you're doing good work. I can't remember who did each bit of research, but talked about like how many like quote unquote game stacks there were on each team in the Best Ball Mania 2 finals last year. Now, part of it, he defined game stack as just having two, like one player from the Broncos and one player from the Chiefs. And I would not really classify that as a game stack. I call that like a secondary correlation or a secondary stack. That's just like from my DFS brain, you know, like your game stack has to have the quarterback and whatever. So that's where I come from, but the majority had at least actually two. But the funny thing about that is I think what you said, digging into it a little bit more, I think the majority of it was actually unintentional. So the two highest owned players in the final were Mark Andrews, who was on 67% of teams, and then Cooper Kupp. And so they played each other last year in the championship. Plus then you get, whether it's Van Jefferson or Odell or Daryl Henderson was a really positive win rate player, right? Maybe Tyler Higbee, Matthew Stafford was a really positive win rate player. So you just got those guys, I think, by sheer luck kind of playing against each other. And then, you know, the Bengals were really profitable. The Bengals are playing the Chiefs. Like, did people actually go out of their way to do that? James Conner was really profitable. And, you know, Dallas wasn't really profitable, but they were a popular team. You know, Tony Pollard was actually fairly
which is insane that they weren't, because they scored the most points in the NFL. Like, how insane is that that the Cowboys weren't profitable after scoring the most points?
Least fantasy friendly monster season I've ever seen in my entire life, coming from someone who drafted a absolute,
like, they were all useless ton. Like, literally every player other than Pollard was useless, and they scored so many points,
and we never got the real Pollard experience. Like the real, you know, like, oh my God, Zeke goes down, Pollard is the RB2 overall.
Yeah.
We never really got that. We got that from like Madison. So anyway, but he talked about that aspect and I thought that was really interesting. And I do really think that I wouldn't draw too much away from it in terms of saying, oh, the field's really hip to this game stacking thing. Cause I don't believe that is the case. And so, yes, If I were to say, like, are people hip to this Broncos Chiefs game, maybe more than some of the other games? Yeah, for sure.
If someone was hip to it, that would be the game they were hip to.
Yeah. And Bills Bengals is the other one.
So I think hard to do. Bills Bengals is so hard to do because of the quarterback price. Like, we talked about this, like the Burrow price is so bad. Yeah. It's like, I even said the last time we did a show, like, I want to start trying to get to some of them, but I can't. I mean, he's going ahead of Hurts. It's impossible.
We both said that same thing. We're like, look, we both hate the Burrow price, but, you know, we like the Bengals, blah, blah, blah. We got a little bit, and then we come back a week or two later, and neither of us still haven't drafted Joe Burrow. But the you hit on why I love this Broncos Chiefs game, and it's that flexibility. Like, you can, from almost any point in the draft,
you can get
some way to build this game into your teams. Like, almost anyway, like literally going down to McColl and KJ Hamler. It's like, if you completely whiffed on this game, right? And I'm not saying you're targeting it like
every time, on every although team. I kind of am though.
I know. I think I said that last night, where I was like, honestly, if I got, you know, at least combinations of this game on every single team, I think I would be happy about that. But it's because there's so many combinations. Like, you have 150 teams to draft in Best Ball Mania, and you could get like an ungodly amount of combinations from, like, mix in Greg Dulcich. You know, our buddy Pat Corain is absolutely obsessed with this kid, and I think he's a fine whatever tight end prospect. And so, like, if I have like Kelsey or Pitts or something like that, and I've whiffed on all the other Broncos and I need an 18th round tight end, sure, like, mix him in. Like, there's so many ways to attack this game. I actually really like Russ better than Mahomes, so I don't feel the stress to take Mahomes. And you have so many stacking options for both of these guys. You have so many. I like, there's four running backs. There's literally both running backs from both teams, plus four wide receivers and like three tight ends that you can draft from this game. So When you have the best game on the board, I think, in week 17, and then you just have a million ways to get to it in not even just stats with one of the quarterbacks, but these secondary correlations, like all these guys are a priority for me. I have the least of Sky probably right now, and probably like the most of maybe MVS, but I'm just trying to like, I don't want to get to week one and be like, you know, I'm underweight on a bunch of guys from this game. I just give me all of them and then make them work within that particular draft that I'm doing.
Well, if your exposure was not uncomfortable enough to that situation, breaking news on the show now.
I don't know.
Darrell Williams has efficiently signed a contract with the Arizona Cardinals.
Cardinals,
not the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh,
so this was like basically, like if Darrell Williams re-signs 1 year, $2 million to the Chiefs, CH goes down a round, Rojo probably goes down two or three rounds, but he's gone.
Wow.
He is on a different team. I mean, like, and it feels like overreacting to a backup running back signing in May, but Darrell re-signing to the team was a huge threat to those two guys because he is just so competent. Like, he's not good, mm-hmm. but he's just so competent at what they ask him to do. Now, still waiting to see where Jerick McKinnon signs. McKinnon could McKinnon could sign a $700,000 deal with the Chiefs, and that would be bad for both of them. But the Darrell domino falling is pretty, pretty big. And also, I'm not going to take Keontae Ingram anymore.
It's coffins. Yeah, it is an absolute coffin for Keontae Ingram and Eno both, because Darrell is like the perfect backup running back for like the NFL teams. Not like you and I aren't picking him as our perfect backup, but like you said it, he's competent enough at basically everything that an NFL offense needs you to do. And they trust him to do all the important things, pass protect, catch the ball, run forward, just put your head down and run forward. And so he's going to be the backup for James Conner. And he would have been a huge thorn in the side. It's not that he ever would have stepped on the field like right away to start the season for the Chiefs, but they always would have had him in their back pocket.
Yeah, the first time CH whiffs on a pass block or fumbles or whatever, then Darrell's coming in there. Now Andy Reid looks at his bench and is like, well, I guess we can give Derek Gore some run. I mean, maybe Derek Gore is like an 18th round stab now.
Yeah, there you go.
But that's a pretty big for CH and Rojo's range of outcomes. It's pretty big, I think.
I agree. I totally agree. So I was going to double back really quick before we moved on to like another game or another situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just talk about the week 17 thing really quick. And like, why, if you're like tuning in and maybe you're not like a crazy sicko best ball bro, like we are, like, why is this week 17 thing so important? Like, obviously,
it's where all the expected value of the tournament
is. It's everything. And I don't think people even realize that enough, particularly this year. I think maybe the last 2 years you could have made a case that like, there's not that many people in the final. So like, I just want to get there and just, you know, optimize my teams around hopefully maximizing just getting there. Right. And like, I wouldn't necessarily argue with you. This year, I think it's pretty different. I think we've reached this space in best ball where these contests are so fucking big. The DraftKings $5 Millie Maker has nearly a million entries, 870,000 entries or whatever. And Underdog, even at a $25 price point, has 451,000 entries. So you have to beat an absolute metric ton of people just to get to the final, right? 0.1% of the field even makes the final. There's 470 teams on Underdog and almost 1,000 on DraftKings. And if you basically run down the player pool, which I did, I wrote an article the other day. It's on Spike Week about week 17 game stacks, but I broke this down and like, why is this important? It's because 60% of the prize pool goes to week 17. Like the rest of the prize pool is like a bunch of people getting paid $5, $10, $25, $50 or whatever. And that's all split up amongst everybody who doesn't make the final. And the absolute max you can make without making the final is less than $500 on Underdog.
And so it's $3,875 to max enter, I think.
Yes. Right. Right. And so you get basically all of the money is in that final week. I mean, DraftKings is even worse. If you make the final on DraftKings, if you get last or in the last,
payment block or whatever.
Yeah. It's $250. It's like you had one of the best best ball teams of the year to make a final of almost a million people, and you made $250. And like, look, I mean, sir, if someone handed me $250, I'm happy with that. But like, that is not my goal. I don't think anyone playing this seriously, that should be your goal. So you need to optimize around how the hell do I win, you know, or have a shot to win in that week 17, because absolutely all of the money is there. And so one of the easiest ways is these week 17 games and figuring out which are the games maybe you want to put a little more exposure to. How do you correlate within those games and all that we're obviously talking about here?
Yeah. So Broncos Chiefs is number one. I think that there.
What's your number two? It's interesting after that one, I think.
So I think there's an argument for two games to be number two: Rams Chargers or Bills Bengals. I give the slight edge to Rams Chargers because the prices make it a little bit easier. It's very easy to do Keenan, Herbert, Mike, and Gerald Everett too, as well. Parham and the 18th round, if you want to do that. And even if we're loosey with the football with these backup Chargers RBs, you know, like, wait, like how many, like there's been so many guys that we've chased after.
Yeah.
Maybe Spiller is finally the guy who scores 8 touchdowns. And then the Rams have a lot of good prices, you know, obviously Cup, but you know, Higbee is like free. Daryl Henderson is free. Stafford on DraftKings is expensive, but on Underdog is like, you can get him in like the 8th, 9th round. Pretty good there. Allen Robinson is pretty appropriately priced. And then the Rams secondary wide receivers, Van Jefferson in like the 14th, Tutu Atwell in the 18th round. I mean, they spent a second round pick on him last year. And then if there's a clear winner between Palmer and Guyton, one of those guys could be pretty valuable. And then also, this is the Galaxy brain wrinkle. If there's no market for Odell, it's August 5th. Why wouldn't he just take 1 year, $4 million from the Rams again? And then he comes back and plays in November or whatever. So that's the extra little wrinkle there.
And the other wrinkle would be the Chargers can sign one of these veteran free agents too. Like, think of Will Fuller, think of an offense with Mike Williams and Will Fuller on the outside, Keenan in the slot, Gerald Everett, Austin Eckler, with one of the best young quarterbacks in who has a goddamn howitzer for an arm in Justin Herbert. You know, I don't think that's off the board. I know, again, friend of the show, Liam Murphy, who won Best Ball Mania 2 last year, he's hinted at it multiple times that, like, you know, he's a huge Bills homer, but I agree with him that the Bills are the best team in the NFL, certainly in the AFC. And he's like, if the Chargers, you know, the Chargers are awesome, but they're kind of missing that last weapon. Keenan's getting older. Mike Williams is good, but not elite. Like, put Will Fuller, like, just drop Will Fuller into that offense, and he would make a lot of sense.
100%.
So there's a lot of different interesting angles to this game. Really quick, the 2-2 thing is so funny to me because, like, if you did not know, if you just ignored his size.
And you just saw where he was drafted
and his production, go look at his college production.
Unreal.
It is fucking unbelievable
as a rusher too. Like, it's not like it, like he did everything.
So like he played with a quarterback named Malik Cunningham, who ironically changed his name from Malik to Mikhail and then back to Malik, I believe. Very weird situation, but Louisville was like the last year's like Ravens after all their injuries for fantasy in college. It was like, they have a really good running quarterback and like a one superstar skill player. And that was 2-2, but they gave up like 50 points a game. So they were just in, you know, every game was a track meet, and 2-2 was just cooking everybody. He was like the must play guy in like college football DFS. You never would have cared the fact that he's, you know, 140 pounds or whatever he is. And so, you know, he's one of these guys where we've talked about a lot of kind of obscure names, but at the end of drafts, like if you get to the 18th round or particularly on DraftKings, you get to the 20th round and it's like, look, I got a Stafford stack with a Mike Williams bring back. Like, just throw, like you're throwing a dart at some random shitty player in the 20th round. Like, there's a dude who this team took in the second round who, other than size, has an unbelievable profile. And I'm actually trying to be better about those kinds of things. Like, who cares if you miss on him? But if he's a hit, the payoff is so big, particularly on teams that are stacking this game. So he's just an interesting like archetype of a player I'm trying to target. The only thing I want to add on like this game and actually the Bills Bengals is I don't have them. So I wrote an article on these game stacks, like I said, and I don't have them on like my main games to target from a game stacking perspective, but that is solely because of what you said basically. And it's the price,
just like, cause there aren't really,
it's hard.
Like the Chargers have late round guys, you know, but the Rams is like the degree of confidence in the Rams guys is much lower than in Chiefs. Like I feel very confident Tim Patrick is going to have at least one spike week, right?
Oh, yeah. Like at least
one, right? Whereas like if I was like Josh Palmer went the whole year and didn't get more than 12 underdog points in a game, I'd be like, yeah, well, you know, I guess that just is going to happen a lot of the time.
Josh Palmer, what'd you expect?
And then for Bills Bengals, the Bengals have no secondary players, none. Because we can't feel confident at all, really, between P. Ryan and Evans. And they might just split it anyways. You know, if Mixon was to go down, it might just be a pure split. And then sitting here on May 24th, we don't know who their fourth wide receiver is. Maybe we will on August 20th. And they'll be like, who is the skinny little white guy who caught the two-point conversion?
Alex Erickson?
No. It's different. Alex Erickson is a Raider. There's another one. Okay, now we got to figure this out.
Now I'm pissed off, yeah.
come on. Let's see. It was Trent Taylor, who used to play
Trent
for the 49ers.
Taylor, yeah. What's the difference between Trent Taylor and Alex Erickson?
What's the difference? There is none. So that just makes it really hard. And then of course, the fact that the Bills might add whoever, could be Will Fuller, could be Julio Jones, could be Odell, you know, just and James, like, I don't know. Have you drafted any Jamison Crowder? I have not.
No, zero.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't do it. So those two games I think are obviously like really good from a DFS perspective. Like when we get to that week, total's going to be really hot. We're all going to like those guys, but at ADP, it's just much harder to do. So my 4 and 5 are the 49ers Raiders. I think this one is really overlooked. I think the Raiders might get super pass heavy. Just because of they're going to pay Waller this money. They got Renfro, who obviously they love. I mean, Carr threw for the fourth most yards in the NFL last year, and then they're adding Devontae Adams to Zay Jones's role. So that feels pretty good. And then the 49ers are just like all obvious smashes, right?
Yeah.
Eli, smash.
I don't know how you say
Lance,
anything negative. Yeah.
Smash. Ayuk, smash. Kittle, what is the tight end 5 now? Like it all lines up to be really, really good.
Yeah. The only tricky part on that game for me is not the 49ers. I'm going, we talk about Lucy with the football, or I'm doing the 49ers thing again. I'm drafting all these guys. I'm drafting you've mentioned, and have gotten me even more hip to Tyrion Davis Price. He's one of my favorite.
The drum beat.
Oh, it already started yesterday. I think it was yesterday. Yep. I read that. They're still happy with Elijah Mitchell, but he's like the bigger, you know, that you mentioned, like he's their Jeff Wilson. He's the banger or whatever. And then he obviously has contingent value if something were to happen.
By the way,
Eli Mitchell.
Drafting Eli and Tyrion Davis Price together, like a 6th round pick and a 14th round pick. I've done it and I feel pretty confident about it that it's fine.
So let's do this stupid ass handcuffing conversation really quickly. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it, but I actually dislike, you mentioned like CMC and Foreman together. I prefer that 49ers example, or even when it's like the Chiefs, more like a 9th round pick and an 11th round pick, where it's like totally ambiguous. And honestly, on a good offense, like they could both just get there. Like, In any game, would you be surprised if they both scored a touchdown? Like, no, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
And then your bet obviously would be in the playoffs. It's just one of the guys, at least in any, not necessarily like the other one gets hurt, but at least maybe somebody takes over a Devin Singletary situation. So like the Bills last year was a good example. Like take Dak Moss in the 9th or 10th round and take Devin Singletary in the 13th or 14th round. And I think that is where I would lean to. As opposed to like, dude, if CMC goes down, like even for any extended stretch, like like Chuba did not replace what CMC was doing last year, and Foreman isn't either.
The thought is not that Foreman would become CMC, but that he might grind you out 16 points for 2 weeks, and then say CMC gets hurt in week 15, and Foreman, I don't even know who the Panthers play. CMC gets hurt in week 15, and he's had a great year up until that point. So there are a shit ton of CMC teams that make it past Steelers. The first cut. There we go.
This example is going to play really well for you too, by the way, because who they play in week 16 is beautiful.
Yeah. So CMC misses 2 weeks. Foreman grinds out. Let's even say 14 for those 2 weeks. Then the CMC non-handcuff teams, they all get nuked because they just lost their first round pick for 2 weeks. And then you're sitting there and there are like five CMC teams that made the final and you have one of them, and then he's back. And then, you know, he goes CMC nuke. That is, and I'm just like making this up. I have no idea if this is borne out in the data, but my assumption would be is that that is just a path I can see the season happening to having a unique CMC team, a unique Derrick Henry team, right? If you take Hassan Haskins or whoever, and it doesn't really work with like Dalvin Cook. Could work with Jonathan Taylor, right? Jonathan Taylor and Jordan, I don't even know if Jordan Wilkins is the backup anymore.
They just signed Tyshawn Alexander.
Tyshawn, yeah. So there are just that was just one of the things I've been thinking about.
Yeah, I think the thing I struggle with from that example is it is like, I know we get hyper specific and we have to, you know, kind of get really galaxy brained on some of this stuff, like we're doing with the week 17, but like that's like a next level of specificity in terms of a scenario that you need to play out.
Yeah.
And again, like if we had max teams, right? If this was like old school DFS where you could just like play as many teams as you wanted to, you know, 500, 600 or whatever teams I could draft into this. It's like, yeah, honestly, I would probably start to run into teams where maybe I should start drafting for that scenario. Maybe I should start drafting for, you know, give me both Sam Darnold and Matt Corral, right, on a team. I'll start drafting for those kind of crazy scenarios, but it's so specific and so the odds on, because you need timing too. You don't need just injury, which is X percent. You need it to happen at such a specific time.
Yeah.
And for such a specific period of time, because it can't be for too long. It can't be for too short, you know? So it's that's my biggest struggle with it and why I prefer the like Chiefs example, where it's like, I mean, it really doesn't, if Rojo goes down and you have CEH, it doesn't matter. You didn't lose your first round pick. You lost your 11th round pick. And like,
right.
You know, if you hit everything else, that doesn't really matter. So that's the only reason why I lean that way. But doubling back to the week 17, the 49ers Raiders, are you having any difficulty getting Raiders? Cause
I'm not taking Adams at ADP
right.
at all. And I'm not really taking Renfro either. So it's mostly Waller, honestly, is the spot where it works out. Cause let's say you take Debo in the second round, then you take Waller in the fourth, then you take Ayuk in the eighth and Trey Lance in the 10th. And then you got your thing. And then I don't even know who is the fourth pass catcher for the Raiders.
DeMarcus Robinson, I believe.
That's not the worst 18th round stab in the world. Cause
you're going to do this again. More DeMarcus Robinson.
So he sucks. So he's really bad, but he at least runs deep routes, right? That's really all I can say is that like, he's really bad, but of Renfro, Adams, Waller, he's clearly the guy who's running the clear out routes. I've not drafted any of him yet, but that's the kindest thing I can say for taking him.
So I will say I did go to make fun of somebody mentioned DeMarcus Robinson in our Discord the other day. And I did go to make fun of it at first because like, oh, LOL, DeMarcus Robinson, stop it. But like, would you have ever expected Zay Jones to come on the way that he did?
Or Aguilar the year before?
Yeah. Like those guys that are like shitty, dusty dudes who everyone has written off, step into that exact role that we're talking about with the Raiders and produce. Like it actually has me on Zay a little bit. Another person I wrote about Zay, like it has me on Zay with the Jags because like, man, maybe this dude can play and earn targets more than I thought. And now that's DeMarcus Robinson. And so I should probably take him a little bit. Honestly, if you prefer Keelan Cole, Keelan Cole's there. It's pretty awful. But I'm just struggling with the Raiders side of things because I don't really like Josh Jacobs, shocker. And then there's
can I interest you in some 18th round Kenyon Drake is probably the passing down back. Like, I don't think Zamir White is going to be the passing down back, which is what the market is assuming right now.
Zamir White wasn't the passing down back at Georgia.
Well, I don't know if there are, I guess they're just assuming he's the handcuff or whatever. Yeah. Let's see what I honestly, this has been memory wipe for me. What did Kenyon Drake do last year?
He was decent for a little stretch, if I remember correctly, because I was drafting him last year.
It looks like he started out the season with 5, 6, and 6 targets and then sucked. Looks like he had his one spike week would have been week 7 against Philadelphia, 14 carries, 69 yards and a touchdown, 3 catches for 10 yards. Like that's fine. Like if he gets 2 of those games, 18th round pick.
Yeah. He was the pass. You're 100% right, man. I didn't remember quite this level of targets either. I remember the Josh Jacobs, like all of a sudden random spike in playing passing downs and getting targets mainly from the DFS season. But like, I mean, Kenyon Drake, 5 targets, 6 targets, 6 targets, skip a few weeks, 8 targets, 3 targets, and then injured. So like, I mean, now we have Josh McDaniels in there and he runs offenses that utilize the running back in the passing game. And people are spinning that a lot for Josh Jacobs. And I get that, but like, what if it's just Kenyon Drake? and he has contingent value. If something were to happen to Josh Jacobs and now all of a sudden,
it's not the Patriot way to draft a rookie running back and give him a bunch of touches. No.
He's not even going to be active. If McDaniel sticks to his laurels from old Bill, Zamir won't even be active week 1. It'll be like, I don't know who they have. Does Jalen Richard still on the team? No, Brandon Bolden. They signed Brandon.
Oh
Bolden.
My God. Yeah. Zamir White undraftable at ADP undraftable. He's not even going to play on the roster.
He needs 2 injuries. He needs Brandon Bolden to get hurt and one of the other guys to get hurt.
Yeah, I think the reason Drake is going so low is because didn't he break his ankle at the end of the year?
I think
so. That's got to be why he's going so low, I think. Kenyon Drake is like kind of good, though.
Remember that? Remember 2 years ago, 3 years ago? So the Cardinals trade for him, right, during the regular season from Miami. He was like barely playing for the Dolphins, and the Cardinals traded for him midseason, and he became the greatest running back of all time, like instantly.
I do first game with Arizona, 15 carries, 110 yards, a touchdown, 4 receptions for 52 yards. And ended the year with 24 carries, 166 yards, and 2 touchdowns against Seattle.
He was a smash. He was an absolute smash. And then the next year, he went at like the 1-2 turn of a fantasy
That's right. Okay.
And he was dust.
It's so funny how like we're always so forward thinking that we just totally forget that these things happen. That is kind of funny. Yeah.
Funny how it's always running backs. I remember all the wide receivers. It's always these. Remember when Josh Jacobs was a first round pick?
People yeah.
Like, what? Josh Jacobs was the first round pick? Yeah, only 2 years ago.
Yeah. And then so 49ers, Raiders, and then one that I don't think anyone else will be on as like a one they're really trying to get after is Cardinals, Falcons. So that's a dome game with a horrible defense and every Falcon is cheap. I mean, Pitts is the most expensive. I think the only 2 guys they have going in the top 100 are Pitts and CPAT, who, by the way, I think is a smash.
I like CPAT too. Yep.
Yeah, he's got the 2 paths to get there. He could be their starting running back or he could be the role he played last year, like half and half.
Exactly. And all they did was take a 5th round rookie to replace those, 15 Mike Davis touches.
And Damian.
Yeah.
So could be Damian.
Hey, I have a little bit. I have a sprinkling of Damian. I'm always partial to Damian. That run he had on the Chiefs, I feel like that's always going to stick with me. I think like I had him in playoff fantasy contests. I had, it was like he won me money.
I'll never forget that Super Bowl. Because also he should have won Super Bowl MVP and Mahomes won it. Like I'm still salt. I mean, it's been 3 years and I'm still just like, I can't fucking believe he didn't win.
I know. I played him in Showdown. That was the first, I think that was the first Millie Maker DraftKings offered for Showdown, and they did it in the Super Bowl. I don't know if it was the first Millie Maker, but it was like the biggest Showdown contest they ever had. I played him in that and he made money. So like he's just always going to be one of my guys. And I still think he can play a little bit. So My take on this game is basically, I couldn't possibly agree with you more. This is from a cost perspective and from a like market sentiment perspective, like in terms of being contrarian, this is my favorite game for sure. I think there's just so many reasons to be excited. Atlanta did nothing to improve their defense because they have no money. There was nothing they could do. And so they're building for the future, and they're building for the future through the offense, right? Drake London, Kyle Pitts. They traded for Bryan Edwards, draft Tyler Allgeier, pick up Marcus Mariota, draft Desmond Ridder, right? So they're doing the right thing, trying to build through the offense. But we know their defense is going to stink. We know it's in a dome, like you said. But they also have kind of exciting weapons now. I mean, who knows if Mariota or Ridder can do
anything. London goes inside the top 100 as well.
Yeah, but still, you can get him. It's kind of like the Chiefs conversation from earlier. It's like, okay, you didn't get Kyle Pitts. That's okay. There's London in the eighth round or whatever. And then there's the running backs. And then there's, if you want to take Bryan Edwards now, I think you can take Bryan Edwards. And so there's ways to handle the Falcons side and the Cardinals, dude. I feel like I'm like losing my mind. I keep talking about this to other people. The Cardinals defense is an abomination. Have you seen their depth chart?
No.
Their defense, they're going to be bad. That like I'm lower on them now from like digging into this from the best ball side.
And
of
their ADP is the same way the Chiefs is, where Rondale, Ertz, and AJ Green are all, they all should be a little bit more expensive because of the Hopkins thing, but the market didn't really react to those guys.
No.
I think Rondale jumped like a round, but AJ Green is going the same place he went last year. And that, far be it for me to be the guy touting the old guy, but I mean, AJ Green last season had 92 targets, 848 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Like, it's pretty good for a 14th round pick.
Don't do this.
Now, if he was going ahead of like Chase Claypool, I would never get him. But he's going next to like Sammy Watkins, who like might not make the team. Like, I was initially excited about Sammy Watkins, but after doing a little bit more reading, it's like he's got to, if he does typical Sammy Watkins shit in training camp, they're just gonna be like, we're not dealing with you, dude. You're out of here. We'll play Randall Cobb. We don't care.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem for Sammy isn't landing spot or even necessarily the contract that people might make a big deal out of. It's that they got a million bodies and they're all just like Sammy Watkins. It's like, we don't give a shit. Like, why is Aaron Rodgers, who was handpicked Randall Cobb to be traded to the Packers last year, even though they drafted Amari Rodgers, why would he give priority to Sammy Watkins? Oh, Lazard has the priority already. We know that.
And Tonya is back from the ACL.
Right. So Sammy has to beat out everyone else. So I haven't drafted Sammy yet. My issue with AJ Green is not what the cumulative numbers ended up being. It's there's never any spikes with this dude.
No, like, I mean, he'd have to score 2 touchdowns. That's the only, he'd have to score like 2, like 17 yard touchdowns. That would be the only way that he'd run into a spike week.
His highest scoring game last year, even without DeAndre Hopkins, was 13.9 points on Underdog. So like, I think I did not have that filtered for half PPR, 16. So he had one 16 point game, which is like, okay, but I'm never like getting super, you know, excited about that. It does get me more excited for Rondale just because without Nuke, it's a little bit more firm that like the opportunity is there for you now, Chief. Like, earn it or you're just going to be a bust. As opposed to like, that was part of the issue with McColl all the time, was like, it wasn't just like locked in that he was going to play every snap.
Yep.
You know, like he had to earn it and
he never earned it. He never did enough to send DeMarcus Robinson, who we just pilloried, to the bench. I mean, he literally, they didn't start playing him over DeMarcus Robinson until the second half of last season. So in the like game 40 of his career, they finally start. And even then, Pringle was playing over both of them.
Pringle's better. Pringle's better than McColl.
Yeah, I think he actually proved
what would
Pringle's ADP be right now had the Chiefs signed him to the deal that he got from the Bears, 1 year, $6 million?
If they had still drafted Sky,
so everything's the same. They still bring in Juju, they still bring in MBS, but they give Pringle 1 year, $6 million with like incentives or whatever.
That is interesting.
I think he goes ahead.
Before
yeah, McColl? I think he goes ahead because he played more at the end of last season. That's and true. Scored five touchdowns and was, you know, more used around the red zone.
He had one monster game down the stretch. I remember. I specifically remember because it was the semifinals and he knocked me out of
six for 75 and two touchdowns against Pittsburgh in week 15.
Unbelievable.
Scored two touchdowns in the divisional round against Pittsburgh as well. So just owns the Pittsburgh Steelers soul.
Steelers. Do the Bears play the Steelers?
That's a great question. man, how sad is the Bears? I thought I would be so excited to be in on Fields this year. And the only thing I ever do with Fields is when I'm stuck and I'll do Kmet and Fields. That's the only, like, I would love to be in on Mooney, but this price tag is so bad.
You're going to hate me because I love Mooney and I love the Bears.
I get it.
But it's this week. We're on this week 17 episode. They play the Lions
and they play inside.
In Detroit. Yeah. Yep.
So, I mean, Fields ran for 400 yards last year. Like, his death as a fantasy quarterback was overstated. It's just that if we're drafting on vibes, the vibes around the Bears, it's all bad vibes. It's so bad. I don't even have in my head. I can't even imagine what their offense is going to look like. It's just going to be a lot of David Montgomery 3 yard runs and Fields scrambling for 4 yards on 3rd and 8 is what it feels like.
Well, they have Byron Pringle now and they have the oldest rookie of all time, Velus Jones, who everybody hates, but they're the perfect example of the team that I couldn't agree with more with what you said and what the market sentiment is. I'm not excited for the Bears. Like, if I were to probably bet a win total, I'd bet the under on the Bears. But around this week 17 conversation, they play the team that was the absolute stone cold nuts to basically have drafted. You wanted Lions. It ended up being mainly Amon-Ra, but Swift was really good while he was healthy. Hockenson was fine. Khalif Raymond had good weeks. Josh Reynolds had good weeks. Craig Reynolds after Swift and Jamal Williams got hurt. They were just a fantasy goldmine, the Lions, but it's because their defense is so bad and they kind of like don't quit in games. And so they didn't really improve their defense. The Lions didn't, outside of Aiden Hutchinson, second overall. They did improve their offense. They brought in DJ Chark and they brought in Jameson Williams. They traded up to get Jameson Williams. So
I'm totally with you on the Lions being like a sneaky good team to stack, especially because Jameson has gotten cheap. Like, it's weird. Jameson has actually gotten cheaper as drafts have gone on because people are realizing he's not going to be ready. But he's like the same thesis as any rookie, which is they're going to start slow and turn on at the end of the year. Like, wouldn't surprise me if Jameson Williams has a more impactful second half of the year than Garrett Wilson, for example. The issue is, like, with the Jets specifically, is you can talk yourself into Zach Wilson, you know, really making a step and being much better and more efficient. Whereas, like, it's very hard to tell yourself, yeah, Jared Goff's going to get a lot better. Jared Goff's going to be throwing bombs down the field. Like, it's going to be very contingent on these guys creating their own value.
I think that's okay. That's where people talk about that a lot. Like, well, if I'm drafting the Lions, should I be drafting Goff? It's like, no, you don't have, like last year, you could have wanted Deontay Johnson and Najee Harris and Chase Claypool on your team. Doesn't mean you have to draft Big Ben. And that's kind of what Jared Goff is like a younger, maybe better, I guess, at this point, than washed Big Ben. What you don't need Jared Goff to be a fantasy asset on your team. You just need him to be competent enough to distribute the ball to all these weapons, right? Jared Goff is, even with these guys, is probably never, like, maybe on like a, like if you do like Zach Wilson, Kenny Pickett, and Jared Goff, it's like, if you want to do that, like as a late three quarterback build, I think that that's fine. But I, like, if you draft any, you know, if you draft Kyler, like, I don't want Jared, I don't really care about drafting Jared Goff, but for this game and for that offense, I think he just needs to be competent enough to, like, dude, just don't fuck this up for everybody, because you have athletes everywhere. And so I'm excited about them. And then in turn, I'm excited about the Bears for this game. Fields, like you said, everybody has shit on Fields. They've written him off now. And he still is the same dual threat, crazy high upside quarterback that we had, even though the situation is terrible. And I like Mooney, man. I think you should be drafting Mooney. Mooney was one of the most target dominant players in the league last year. He was actually somewhat efficient.
Wasn't playing with Pringle though.
That is true. He now has to compete with Byron Pringle and Velus Jones for targets.
So this is my issue with Mooney. I don't hate it in a vacuum, but he goes right ahead of Elijah Moore, who I like more. Mm-hmm. He goes right ahead of Drake London, who I don't like more, but whose range of outcomes I think is better. I think Drake London has like a crazy 10 touchdown season in him just because of the play style he is. Amon-Ra St. Brown and Mooney, I could go either way. Like, I don't feel like St. Brown's ADP has dropped enough to reflect at how much they invested in wide receiver. Agreed. Shark, like the addition of Shark and Jameson Williams, I think tells us that the Lions decision makers don't think Amon-Ra St. Brown is capable of being the guy he was at the end of last season. But then this is where I'm just like, I mean, these are guys who go 10, 15 picks after who I like more. Burks, like more. Devonta Smith, I like more, especially because he's easily stackable at that 6-7 turn with Hurts. Hopkins, I mean, it's like, I don't know. I'm not really taking him right now, but again, you can see that being bad. And then Sky, Ayuk, like, I like those. And not that I would take them over them, but this is a range where I'm like, well, I'll take a quarterback or I'll take a running back because I don't love taking Mooney there.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, people will do that game. I'm sure I've done it 1,000 times in like a, well, here's the guys that, you know, go around him. So why don't you take him? It's like, well, because 15 picks later I can get.
So whatever, it's like, Sky, I can take, Sky it's Moore. Like sometimes I have the decision between like Mooney and ETN and like, I'm just smashing ETN, like ETN, probably my favorite running back at ADP right now.
Yeah. And so I am taking, to be fair, it's been mostly on DraftKings. We talked at the top about where we're drafting, where the drafts are so soft. I feel a little more pressure on Underdog to make sure I'm maximizing all of that value on DraftKings. It's like, I love this game. I like Mooney. I'm already loaded. Like sometimes ETN might fall after, right? I can have my cake and eat it too on DraftKings, where, so I'm a little bit more flexible, but I do still really like this. The ETN thing, that's the only other game I wrote up, was actually the Jags Texans. And I think that's a low key fun week 17 game. You know, a bad team shootout type of situation.
Both teams probably don't care. Every Texans player is cheap other than Cooks. So if you want to talk yourself into Mechie, you want to talk yourself into Marlon Mack, whoever.
Nico Collins.
Sure. Damian Pierce feels like, it's like, I can't really take him. I think I would only take him as like a fourth RB on a zero RB style team where like, I literally might need like some 8-point weeks, not even double. I just might need some 8-point weeks to scrape me by. Cause it just like, you know, Rex, like they were bringing dudes in off the street last year. Like Royce Freeman shows up. The coach literally didn't know his name. Do you remember that? David, the coach was like talking about him in a press conference and forgot his name. It's like it's like a joke, and the Texans are a joke. It's like Cooks too goes right next to Mooney, and I'm like, I was the guy who was fading Cooks every week on DraftKings last year like, I just am not that, like, I'm not that guy. I know how I like to play fantasy, and I'm not buying that Brandon Cooks is going to have a Davante Adams target share all year again.
Yeah, I don't think, but I think I do think Davis Mills showed us a lot more.
Sure.
And then everybody expected through this is I'm basically just reading off this article, but from weeks 14 to 18, so he started the year, got hurt, came back, and to close the year, they scored more than 23 points per game. They beat the Chargers, if you remember. That's basically what kept the Chargers out of the playoffs, was the Texans with Davis Mills beat them. He dropped like a 30-something ball on the Chargers. He threw for 252 yards per game, and he had 9 touchdowns and 2 picks. Not like, that's not like crazy, but he was like fine. Like, we just talked about Jared Goff. Like, if Jared Goff does that with all these weapons, just like distribute the ball, don't make mistakes, like, there's a lot of upside. And I think Mechie went before all these other dudes. We just talked about Sky. We've talked about every wide receiver under the sun. Mechie went before all of them on this team. He's going to get opportunity. And Nico was their guy last year. They have Brevin Jordan also at tight end. I agree with Damien. I can't click the button on Damien Pierce. Some people are trying to tell me that I need to stop being stubborn. That one's a struggle.
The film watcher said he was really good.
Yeah.
Graham Barfield, who does a lot of good stuff with running backs. He's like, guy's really good. Doesn't make sense that he wasn't. And Florida does this with all their, I mean, Florida literally just did this with Tony, who, like, Tony looked like the best wide receiver in the NFL for like 2 quarters last year, you know, and he got benched all the time. Tony, by the way, just while we're here, he's like the perfect guy for the way I draft, which is like, if I lose this one, it's fine. But like, Tony has like pure smashes in his range. Tony has like 100 receptions, 1400 yards, 10 touchdowns in his range.
100%. Another team that we're not talking about here, but I think is a viable week 7. They play the Colts in week 17. And dude, the Giants, I'm just in.
Oh, again. Yeah.
Yeah, the Lucy with the football,
like,
thing.
It's like, the Giants, I lost. I got smoked so hard on the Giants last year. And it's also like, building in the back doors. Like, oh, shit, I got sniped on Mahomes and Russell Wilson. It's like, all right, great. I take Tony round 10. I take Daniel Jones round 13. I take Wandale in the last round. Done.
And Wandale season. He's already getting hyped, too.
Well,
hyping Wandale.
I did a show with Jericho, Connor Driscoll, last week. And I said, it was like, Tony is a guy that coaches are going to hate because he's going to complain. He's going to not give his all in practice. And Wandale is the exact opposite. Wandale is going to show up and grind so fucking hard. And the coaches are going to be like, we got to reward this guy by playing him, you know, because he just is working so hard. And like, so not surprising to me that the first things we're hearing is like, oh, we love this guy. Like, cause that's just what he is.
He's just a good football. That's one of my things. Like, I try to, as I get better and older in this space, I try to divorce myself a little bit from like really truly getting my hand in the dirt. Like, cause like I play college football DFS. I watch lots of college football. I watch every NFL game. I try not to get too married to like, I think that dude stinks or I think that dude is good. But Wandale is the one that, like, if you've at all watched him play over the last couple of years in college football, you're just like,
I mean, go look at his game logs and all of the important games he played for his team. Like, I was telling Draco this, like, his last ever game was a pretty meaningless bowl game against Iowa, for Kentucky. And he got hurt in the game and then came back in. And he had 4 catches on the final game-winning drive and ended with 10 for 170, but like was just like literally putting the team on his back in what it, you know, really was a meaningless game, but the biggest game of his career pretty much because he played for crappy teams.
My favorite was, so he transferred to Kentucky from Nebraska. He comes into Nebraska as a true freshman and like was the best player on the offense immediately. Now they stunk. But like
was recruited as a running back and he was so good that he was like, fuck it, I'll play wide receiver if that's the only way I can get on the field.
They did everything to get him the ball. They ran zone read with him at running back. They put him in the slot. They would line him up out wide as a little midget dude out there. Like, they just for 2 years at Nebraska did everything they could to get this dude the football because he was the only way they could move the ball on offense. And like, it's one thing to be like, oh, we played on a bad team, but like, this is a reasonable Big Ten team. It wasn't like he was, you know, people like to use that against Trey Lance or against Josh Allen back then, or maybe against Sky Moore this year. It's like, he still played in the Big Ten. You were just describing a bowl game against Iowa, one of the best defenses in the country. It's not like he wasn't facing competition and he was just doing absolutely everything for first a Big Ten offense and then for an SEC offense at Kentucky. And so
if I end up being wrong on Wandale, I won't, like, some guys I feel bad about, being like, there were like obvious warning signs, but if I end up being wrong about Wandale, that it's fine. I just think he's good. And that's really all to me at the end of the day. It's like, I just think he's really good.
I agree. Can I throw another one at you from the rookie class that now he's gotten steamed so much that I'm not getting as much as I kind of thought I would, like maybe after the NFL draft, but in this game, an awesome like backdoor pairing or backdoor part of your stack is another rookie wide receiver on the other side, Alec Pierce for the Colts. And he is a guy that, again, like getting my hand in the dirt, his production and stuff wasn't off the charts.
He was just always open, and Ritter, and their offense just didn't even call for Ritter to throw to him.
That's my take. I watched a lot of Cincinnati games over the last couple of years, and you just watch him, and he's 100% what you said. He's 7'11". Dude is literally always open. But even watch him in, and I'm stealing this now from I'm not going to give the credit appropriately, from a football film bro grinder that was like, Alabama, when they played in the playoff this past year, he was cooking everybody. But Ritter couldn't get him the ball. And I specifically remember myself, my, you know, untrained eyes watching a couple plays where they marched the field, actually, Cincinnati did, a couple of drives and got down into the red zone, and Pierce just straight cooked dudes, and Ritter either got sacked or just like didn't throw it to him or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, he is just destroying these Alabama DBs. And then this film guy that I was watching was like, well, then go back and watch. Alabama doubled him the rest of the game. They were like, this dude, we see him cooking these guys. We're not letting him beat us anymore. And so like those little things don't show up, right? You can't go to Player Profiler and see anything about that type of situation, but just watching and then seeing little things like that, like in the playoff game. And now he lands in a spot with, I mean, dude, his target competition is Michael Pittman and Paris Campbell, who hasn't played in 2 years. It's like, I think he can be the guy, obviously not Justin Jefferson, but like Amon-Ra, if he did what Amon-Ra did last year, would I be surprised? No, I don't really think I would. And I don't think anybody's going to peg him for that kind of a player.
Yeah. I don't have very much of him either, mostly because I'm just not that interested in Matt Ryan. So it doesn't lead, like Matt Ryan is like, one thing I was just thinking of earlier is, even on elite quarterback teams and elite tight end teams in the 20 round drafts right now, I'm taking a lot of third quarterbacks and third tight ends, just because this is like very like level one reductionist thinking, but like there's so little clarity on which of these like post 200 ADP guys are like even going to make teams. Like, yeah, how many guys have I drafted in May who like get cut? Whereas I'm like, I'm pretty sure Kenny Pickett's going to make the Steelers. You know, I'm pretty sure Hayden Hurst is going to play for the Bengals. And like, I'm not going to need to take those guys on August 4th, because I'm going to have a much clearer idea of what teams' offenses are going to look like then. And then that gets me like a different portfolio of like roster constructions and stuff. Whereas like, oh, I have a Mahomes, Trey Lance, Matt Ryan team or whatever on DK. And it's like, yeah, maybe that's like a minus EV pick, because like, why would I ever need those Matt Ryan points? But I'm just like, well, at least I know Matt Ryan's gonna make the team, and I'm not certain that Paris Campbell is gonna play for the Colts or whatever.
Yeah, I think you could take that a step further and not have to do the quarterback thing and just lean into kind of the young guys and the guarantees a little bit more. That's actually, I like that you brought that up, because I don't think it's been something that I've been like specifically thinking, but I've been actively doing because of what you like, maybe I'm just snake bitten from Colin Johnson. And luckily I wasn't on the Breshad Perriman or Tyrell Williams thing last year.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, we get those every year that are really popular 15th round picks that get cut. but I had my fair share, right? Some people were on like JV and Hawkins and like, you know, but like, that's like the Justin Ross thing. It's like,
yeah,
we don't need to take that dude. Just take Alec Pierce and take Wandale and take
even the like, Justin Ross thing is a great example. It's only being born out of like off season, like boredom and like irrational exuberance. Whereas like Kenny Pickett, even if you already have two quarterbacks, is just like a way better 18th round pick or Matt Corral or Desmond Ridder. These guys are like way better picks than these wide receivers who are like dogs to get a catch.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so deferring to, even if it has to be a position,
like, or even a dusty tight end, even a CJ Uzuma or a Hayden Hurst or whatever, it's like you're still giving yourself some cover there.
Yeah, because they're gonna be on the team and they're gonna be on the field, you know, barring injury. Was there any game? This is the one other question I wanted to ask you. Was there any team that like you were really into before the schedule dropped?
I mean, Cowboys Titans is so bad, right? Like the Titans awful. They're going to do everything they can to like, and it might even be Malik Willis by then too. Like if the Titans season goes bad, so it's just like, obviously if it was, I mean, even Cowboys Eagles, which would have been a bad game last year, but could have been a really good game this year, right? With AJ Brown and like think the Eagles are being pretty clear they want to throw more. Like that game sucks.
Yeah. Funny you mentioned them, but that was Eagles were one of my teams in every like pre NFL draft tournament.
And the Eagles might have literally been the worst week 17 opponent. It's so bad.
So the Eagles drew the Saints in week 17 now. And I think the Eagles defense is going to be pretty decent. And then they draw the Saints in Philly. So not in the dome. And even then, like the Saints defense, dude, like I know it's like a little bit of a bit from the Tom Brady thing, but like they're so good every single year. They like shut down the best, like Tom Brady can't score a fantasy point against them. It actually knocked Tom Brady and Buckstacks were like the best teams in all of best ball last year. And they played the Saints in the playoffs. And if you remember, Godwin Evans and Lenny all got hurt in that game, and nobody like scored the Bucks, like, you know, Brady had like two fantasy points or something like that. The Saints defense is like one of the most underrated things probably in the NFL. They signed Honey Badger. They're still going for it, right? They're kicking the can down the road on the cap, and they're going to keep trying to win. And dude, say whatever we want about the Cowboys. Philly does play the Cowboys in week 16. That's not like a matchup we thought last year was like, oh my God, every Cowboys game is wheels up. The Cowboys defense is a lot better. And then they do play the Bears, who I think is a pretty good matchup, but they just didn't get a playoff schedule that like I felt really excited for, particularly in week 17. And I was like really, really excited for Hurts, Goddard, AJ Brown, Devonta, Miles Sanders, everybody.
Dolphins, Patriots sucks. You know, the Dolphins make all these investments in, you know, they trade for Tyreek, you know, Waddle. Obviously last year they sign all these running backs. The Patriots are going to try everything they can to make that a 10-3 game. Vikings, Packers, you know, it's kind of a shitty thing for Justin Jefferson teams where he's got we're really getting into it now. He's got a horrible wide receiver cornerback matchup. Oh, right?
God damn it. I was hoping you wouldn't say that. And then I could bring it up and be like, aren't you worried?
Yeah, I'm worried. I'm worried about Justin Jair. Jefferson and best ball because of Jair. Alexander. And conversely, I mean, I think both of these teams are probably going to be pretty conservative on offense. So that kind of brings them down. Steelers Ravens could be good if the entire Ravens defense gets injured the way they did last year, because the Steelers guys are all pretty cheap. You know, Claypool, pretty cheap. Pickett, obviously, you know, an 18th round pick. Freiermuth, pretty cheap. And then, Andrews, Lamar is just such a smash. Like it's such get like Andrews round two, Lamar round four is so good.
The one thing about, the nice thing about Lamar and Andrews really, is that it doesn't really matter. Steelers doesn't really matter. Lamar's going to
There's nothing they can do. It's just that the Steelers guys like Pickens, Claypool, Freiermuth are all really cheap bring backs.
It does make that like a Lamar, Andrews, or Bateman, if you prefer Bateman.
Or Duvernay, buddy. Big things coming for Devin.
It's not Duvernay. It's Tylan Wallace. I will go to my grave that it's Tylan Wallace.
They just like Duvernay more, I think. I mean, I think Tylan Wallace is better, but I just think this is like a Wandale Tony thing where the coaching staff has just decided that they – because they we're already – if we're talking about drum beats, we're already getting Devin Duvernay drum beat.
Yeah, that part is fair. But don't you think that Duvernay is like the archetype of – so like he's a slot receiver.
He's like a gadget guy, yeah.
Right, he's like Isaiah McKenzie-esque kind of. Like he's fast as shit, and he's a really good athlete. But he can't play on the outside like as an every snap player.
But they might put him there, though, because Bateman and Wallace are not fast. Well, I mean, they're obviously fast by like human standards, but they're not mm-hmm. fast for NFL wide receiver standards. No. So Duvernay is the better – I mean, Pete brought this up to me, like, why don't they just sign Will Fuller? Like, Will Fuller is great fit. Ravens.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Julio and Fuller both make a lot of sense for the Ravens. That's what's funny. I really want Julio to sign with the Ravens because everybody that keeps saying, oh, you got to draft Julio because as soon as he gets signed, he's going to shoot way up and like, you're going to want him no matter where he signs. I'm like, are you really going to want Julio if he signs with the Ravens?
I think the only spot where I would draft Julio at his ADP that will rise, because all these guys' ADPs rise when they sign, is the Buccaneers. That's the one spot where I would even still draft him as he went up would be the Buccaneers, because I've never been a Russell Gage guy.
Yeah, well, Russell Gage is going to show you this year. Buddy.
He sure is. All right, we've been rambling for a long time. We could go for another hour, but let's get out of here. What are we looking for on Spike Week?
So just pushing out tons of new content. We're in a little bit of this lull of the off season, right? We obviously just spent more than an hour talking about Week 17 games.
Wait until the first guy tears his knee. When the first guy tears his knee, the discourse will begin.
But so been pushing out like kind of a strategy content, like some low key, like, you know, quote unquote sleepers, put air quotes around that, like redefining like what a sleeper really is, talking about these Week 17 games, just putting out a lot of more like strategic macro level content as we get into camp, right? Where it's here. I made a joke on Twitter that like Trey Lance is about to practice for the first time with the 49ers this afternoon. And I'm just going to be, you know, my timeline is going to be nothing but hype videos of Trey Lance, but we're finally soon going to be getting into a little bit more of the meat and potatoes of the offseason, where we're going to get to start learning a little bit more. But I think there's a lot of strategy type stuff that we can like this Week 17 thing, wrap your head around how you want to approach that, because in 3 weeks, like I'll come back on here and Davis and I will be talking about every like 1,000 different news items that are happening at all these training camps. And it's easy to lose sight of these like higher level strategy elements. So that's really what I've been focused on. Just go to spikeweek.com. It's all free right now. And join the Discord. It's the only other thing.
There we go. Join the Discord. Everyone will be back later in the week.